So yeah, this talk is about these things called stratified B-trees, and in general about dictionaries which allow you to have multiple versions of them. So this is joint work with mostly with Andrew Bide and a few other people at Akunu and Oxford University. So first of all, versioned dictionaries. So what is that? So it's basically a dictionary where you can have versions, as you might expect. So we support, we want to support the following operations, right? So we want to be able to update, given a key, a version, and assign some data to that key in that version. We want to be able to do queries. So given a start key and an end key and a version, give me all the keys, potentially all the values as well associated with those keys in that version. And finally, we want to support an operation called clone, which means given a version V, we want to add an extra child to V that inherits all the latest versions of all the keys that were at V. Right, so this is a fairly natural extension of the dictionary interface we're all used to, right? Just get and set key. And yeah, therefore it's pretty much fundamental to what happens in file systems and a lot of databases. So what am I doing? So well, in this talk, I wanted to describe a new data structure for doing this stuff, which is nice in the sense that it has an optimal trade-off. You can prove it has an optimal trade-off between the amount of space it uses, the query time, and the time it takes to update the dictionary. And in particular, it's pretty well suited to this theme of big data that we talked about at the start of the workshop. Okay. So, what's the state of the art in this area? Well, it's pretty much this, actually. It's pretty much copy on write. So, I guess everyone knows here probably better than I do how this stuff works. So, I apologize if I get this wrong, but it's a toy example. So, there's this technique of path copying, which Dietz, Slater, and Tarjan talked about some decades ago. So you take a B-tree and you apply this path copying technique, right? So on the left, you have a B-tree rooted at V1. So every time you want to do an update, so you create a version 2 and you say, I want to update a particular key in V1, in V2. So you walk down the tree in V1, you find the leaf node that corresponds to the key you want, and you write out a new path, right? And this is for V2. And you have to copy every single block, every single node that you found on the path. And then a lookup, of course, consists of finding the correct version, and then all the nodes induced by following nodes and pointers from there, that's just a B-tree. So a standard B-tree lookup gets you what you want. So what are the problems with this? So the main problem is that, well, one of the major problems is that the space blow-up can be absolutely terrible. So in particular, every single update might require you to take a rewrite of an entire path down the tree. So that can be pretty bad in terms of space. Can you imagine in a sort of practical implementation, you might have 256K blocks, you might have a B-tree of depth 3 or 4. That's a lot of work just to change a 16-byte key. But never mind. And the other major problem it has is that updates are very slow, and that's for the same reason as above, right? If you've got to write out this amount of stuff, then there's only so fast you can do it. One of the major problems it has that we're only starting to sort of come across now, right, as hard drives become a lot faster in sequential rather than random access, is that this thing needs random I/O to work, right? All these accesses are pretty much random. So it can't take advantage of cheap disks that have 150 megabytes a second transfer rate. And finally, concurrency is very tricky and quite messy in this. So you might say, well, okay, let's put this in a log file system, right? So then all the updates are sequential. That fixes the slow updates problem. Well, yes and no. I mean, it makes some of the updates mostly sequential, but you're just punting this to the issue of garbage collection, which is pretty much the Achilles heel, as we know, of log file systems. There's no log file system in existence, as far as I know, that gives you any sort of guarantees on how it will perform under load. Okay, so what kind of workloads are we interested in anyway that kind of motivate thinking about new data structures? Well, sorry to be buzzwordy, but yeah, let's talk about big data. So we want to do very fast versioned updates. We want to do very fast range queries, say for analytics. We also want to be able to exploit other devices, for example, solid state devices, especially flash devices that have this strange asymmetric block size. We also want to be able to give provable guarantees on the performance of this thing. So we don't want to rely on log cleaning. So for these workloads, I claim that this stratified B-tree beats the copy-on-write B-tree and actually everything else that's known. And here's a sort of hand-waving proof of that. So here's here's a very basic prototype implementation. So imagine, so this is doing just pure inserts. So I'm plotting, I don't have a pointer, but I'm plotting the insert rate against the number of keys I've inserted, scaled up a bit on the x-axis, in fact, against the copy-on-write B-tree. So you can see as pretty much a story is that as the copy-on-write B-tree hits the memory allocated to this process, then it falls out of RAM onto disk, and then we're at the limit of random I/O. So we're in a, I don't know, two and a half, three orders of magnitude faster here, right? But you might think, well, there's a trade-off to be had, right? If I've sped up insertions, then I'm going to slow down on queries, but not so. So here's what happens if you do range queries. Because of what I'll discuss later, the stratified B-tree still manages to be sort of over one order of magnitude faster than the copy and write B-tree here. In fact, if you look at the figures, the copy and write tree is just completely limited by doing random I/O for range queries, whereas the stratified tree is completely CPU bound here. So, as a side note, I implemented this in OCaml, and OCaml is only single threaded, so I don't recommend that for anyone who wants to do that in future. So let me talk about a bit about how it works. So I want to discuss something called something we call a doubling array. I guess it's known various places under different terms, but never mind. So for inserts, we have this thing where imagine you insert a key. So say key 2. You just store it in memory. Then you insert another key, and you store that in memory. And now you have say two things of roughly the same size. So you merge them together. Right? Some of you may have seen this kind of thing before. So it's quite similar to these log-structured merge trees or the cache-oblivious look-ahead arrays or the logarithmic method, if you've seen that. So eventually this process... Oops, what's going on there? Right, so you sort of repeat this process, and eventually you get two things now of size 4. You merge those guys together, and you keep repeating this, and you get these larger and larger arrays that roughly double in size, and so that's why it's called a doubling array. And this is fast because merging and writing these things to disk only ever use sequential I/O, and they use lots of they use enough sequential I/O to make it worthwhile for the disk. So this happens quickly. So how do we do queries in this thing? Well, we've got a bunch of arrays of different sizes. We want to query it for some key. Well, we could add, one way of doing this is to add something like a B-tree or an index to every single array, and then a query simply queries every single array independently. Right? You can do better than that. You can add Bloom filters to the arrays, or you can do other various tricks, but this is roughly the idea. So this runs in time, proportional to the depth of these little index trees multiplied by the number of arrays we've got to search for. Okay, so that's how you do this. That's a way of doing fast updates without versioning. So let's switch to versioning. So why is this interesting? Well, there are many reasons why we want to do versioning. One interesting application is we'd like to be able to say, go to a big website that's got a huge amount of data and say, look, hey, you can give all your developers a recent branch of the entire Facebook or something like that. They can clone it, they can test all their schemes or machine learning algorithms on a separate branch, and then throw it away if you know, once they're done, or atomically switch over to this new branch. So if you can do things like performance isolation between branches, this is potentially quite powerful. Okay, so I wanted to then talk about just roughly about how the algorithm works. So let's consider laying out. So we've got an array here, this blue thing. So let's imagine I've laid out keys 1 to 13 for some version 1 here. Right, so this is great. If I want to do a range query in this, I'm going to be able to use sequential I/O, and none of it will be wasted. Excuse me. So imagine I then have K6 for version 2. Where do I put this? Well, if I put it at the end of this array, so I order things lexicographically by version, then key, then doing a range query, say, you know, K1, K2, up to K7 for version 2, is going to be pretty bad, because I want to inherit. I'm assuming that version 1 is a parent of version 2 here, sorry. So version 2 inherits all the keys from version 1. So this kind of layout is going to be bad for range queries at version 2. Okay. So what if I try to keep all the versions close together? So I try to do something like order the entries lexicographically by KV. Well, that can be kind of annoying as well, because imagine I've got loads of versions. Well, then a query for a single version might have to skip over all this stuff that it's not interested in. So both of those techniques aren't really going to work. So let me talk about what we do. This is a kind of squashed diagram. So we have this notion of versioned arrays. So I'm going to represent a versioned array by this sort of matrix in the top. So you've got keys keys are the columns, versions are the rows. So for example, if I've shaded a box, that means that, you know, for example, K1 at V2 exists in this array, right? And I've got a version tree on the right-hand side. So what I have is this notion, of live, which is kind of crucial. So we say that a key is live at a particular version. If you do a query at that version, you can retrieve that particular key. So, for example, if you look at K3, V1, well, that's live at V1, right? But it's not live at V2 because that key's been overwritten at V2, but that key is still live at V3 because it hasn't been overwritten since then. Yeah, there's no one on the path in the version tree between V1 and V3 who's overwritten that key K3. So for any given version, we can define the number of keys which are live, the number of elements which are live in that version, and then we can say, for a given version, what fraction of the total key, what fraction of the total elements in any array are live at that version? Okay, so what we do is we take arrays, we tag them with sets of versions which are reachable in that array. Then we have this notion of density, as I've written it here, that you take the minimum of this quantity over all the versions tagged to that array. So let's take this example. So the live counts are, as I've written, so V1 has live count 4, V2 has live count 4, in fact, V3 has live count 4 as well, because if you look, all the keys, K0 to K3, are accessible at every single one of them. It may be a different version, but never mind. And we say that an array is dense if the density is at least a third. So what's the notion of this density? So it means that, the idea is that if an array has high density, it means that for any version, if I scan through the entire array, for example, I'm going to pick up lots of stuff that's useful to my query. It may mean that I have a large number of duplicates, but there's a trade-off there. So we want to maintain this density property for every single array in the system. So we're going to do something like the following. So Yeah, as I said already, tag every array with the set of accessible versions W. Now, as we're doing this process I described before, so we're doing this promote to the next level, merge of two arrays, and promote again and merge. Right, the result of doing a merge might be an array that's very large, may have millions of keys in it, but only one of them might be live, let's say, or very few of them might be live for any version in that array. So that array is very sparse. So at that point, we apply something called density amplification, which is, I guess, where the heart of this material, where the sort of the heart of the difficulty lies. And it's fairly complicated. I don't really have time to go into it in this talk, but please see the paper for details of that. This is a diagram explaining it. So with that, I'll end. Hopefully, you have some questions.
So we have time for some more questions.
Questions? Microphone. You had your use case diagram being about forking off different versions for, you know, testers or something. Have you thought about this just in general as for keeping a multi-version database where you want to keep sort of zillions of versions of every key and let reads happen, you know, arbitrarily at any point over the last 5 minutes or something? How sort of fine-grained do you expect this versioning to be, and does the algorithm care?
So there's one major restriction with this, which is that the version tree has to fit into RAM. Well, I mean, that's almost true, yeah. The version tree can't be as large as the data, as the metadata, that's for sure. Yeah, so you can't do the thing of making every update create a new version.
Okay.
But you could take a new version every, I don't know, a few seconds or something like that.
Okay.
I have comments and questions. The version data structure, there is many different types of storage media, hard disk drive or SSD. What do you think is the storage media where this technique can be the best?
I think it can be applied equally. Well, I know that it can be applied very efficiently to both disks and SSDs. Okay. So the results I showed in the graphs were for disks. I have similar things for SSDs. Okay. So for disks, it works well because it mostly uses sequential I/O.
Okay.
And disks are good at that. For SSDs, it works because SSDs have this asymmetric block size.
Okay.
So you typically have to write in very large block sizes.
Right.
So, you know, you just wait until the array.
Right. The reason I made this comment is it looks that in SSD, override, if you can avoid override, then that's the way you use the SSD. So this seems to be native data structure, which behaves that way. So I believe the performance improvement can manifest in
okay.
SSD. That was my comment. Nick.
Austin Clements, MIT. You mentioned in the paper that point queries are more expensive than this data structure.
Yes.
And I was wondering a few things. One is, I guess, how important are point queries compared to range queries in real applications? And also, is there a way that you can, are there knobs on your data structure that would let you make point queries more efficient, possibly at the cost of other things, if point queries were more important?
This is true. Actually, so if you look at the Kohler paper, or I think it was SPAR 2007, is that right? So Michael Bender has a paper in SPAR 2007, which has a similar data structure, but not with versioning. And so they have a technique of changing the rate at which you grow the sizes of arrays between levels, and that gives you a trade-off between point queries and updates. You can apply something like that here. It turns out it's very difficult to, it's much more difficult to maintain the density requirement.
Mm-hmm.
It starts to involve these factors. But so to answer the second part of your question, I think the kind of applications we're looking at are ones where mostly they want to be doing, they want to mostly be doing very high inserts continually and then a bunch of range queries as well.
Thank you.
So maybe it's not a traditional file system workload, which is why I had a slide in the middle trying to get myself out of it.
Hi, I just wanted to ask if you had any ideas as how you would handle large sequential insertions or maybe partially sequential insertions. If you just sort of go the doubling array route, you could end up spending as much time as you would for random insertions, which doesn't seem to make sense.
So the thing that's presented, right, is the complete worst case. So imagine I just give you something of size, I don't know, 10 megabytes, so it's completely sorted. Well, I can just skip to the, one option is I could skip to the correct place.
You'll get tearing on the blocks and you could fragment.
Pardon?
If you were to just skip around like that, you could also fragment because the sequential sections won't be necessarily block aligned.
Yeah, so I mean, if the idea is that, I guess in practice what you do is you don't store entire arrays completely sequentially. You just store them so that they're sequential enough in practice. So for example, a disk, you only have to read within several megabytes, say 10, 20 megabytes, and you get most of you amortize most of the seek penalty.
I can talk with you afterwards.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Thanks.
Okay. Questions? Okay.
Did you state what the asymptotic bounds for this data structure are, or did I miss
that? I did not do that.
Can you state that, or?
Yes. That's in the paper. Would you like me to give you it now?
So it
gives you something which is, I guess if you take the cola and you replace the n's by n sub v, where n sub v is the number of elements live at a version v, then you get the same bounds.
Okay, are the point queries asymptotically different than for something like a cola, or?
No, the point queries, I believe, grow as they say the same thing, as I just said,
Are the queries all the same basically?
The point queries are log n sub v. Yeah, maybe we can.
Log n. Okay.
So the point is the number of arrays you have to examine for any query at any version is something like log of the number of elements which are accessible at that version. Because every one of those arrays has at least a constant fraction of the elements live. That version.
Okay, you guys can take this.
Yeah, okay.
This is not fine. Okay, so we had three very nice papers and presentations. Like, thanks all the speakers.